morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. The State Department of Health announced last week that there's been a 61% increase in fatal prescription drug overdoses over the last decade. The sale of prescription drugs made from opium, including oxycodone, morphine, and methadone, has gone up over 111% over the same period. And prescription drugs are now responsible for more fatal overdoses than illicit drugs like cocaine and heroin in New Mexico. What do you think has caused this increase in prescription drug overdose death? And what can officials do to respond? We'll take your calls and comments today. The number to call locally is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send an email to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online at kunm.org. Joining us to discuss this morning, Albuquerque Mayor Richard Berry. Also, Michael Landon. He is Acting Director of the Public Health Division of the Department of Health here in New Mexico, and Jennifer Weiss. She is the executive director of the Heroin Awareness Committee. Thanks to you all for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
So I wanted to start off first with you, Dr. Landon. This report that the Department of Health put out last week was an analysis of Drug Enforcement Agency data. And I'd like it if you could kind of set up the report. How did you do this analysis to figure out that there had been a 61% increase in the fatal prescription drug overdoses over the last decade or so?
Yes, Elaine. This report actually used two data sources. One data source was vital records data, so death data for New Mexico. That's where we determined, and we've known this for a while, that the rate's been increasing substantially. You mentioned the 62% increase. So what the Drug Enforcement Administration provided was data by zip code area in New Mexico regarding sales of prescription painkillers or opioids. And We've known that nationally there have been, you know, substantial increases in sales of these drugs, suggesting the availability of these painkillers is much greater than it used to be. And we basically confirmed that in New Mexico.
And how does New Mexico fare compared to the rest of the nation?
New Mexico leads the nation in drug overdose death. And it has done so since 1992, with the exception of 2 years. So we have a historic problem with drug overdose death. It had been primarily an issue of drug overdose due to illicit drugs such as heroin and cocaine, but since 2007 we've noted that prescription drugs contribute to the majority of these deaths.
Mayor Berry, you created a task force late last year to address this problem here in Albuquerque. Can you talk a little bit about the specifics of Albuquerque? Albuquerque has higher rates than other parts of the state when it comes to overdose deaths and opioid use. Talk to me about what you're looking to accomplish with the task force.
Well, I think as we start, Elaine, we have to understand that this is a national issue as well as a state and a local issue. I think one of the most important things that I had to decide as a mayor to start with is this something that, as an administration, we're willing to be in the forefront? This is a situation where we've got families. We'll hear from Jennifer today. We've got professionals like Dr. Landon. But we have to have people that are willing to have this discussion, and as uncomfortable as it may be. And so we have a program called ABAC in Albuquerque, which are some funds that are available to us through some clawbacks from long story. But we had some funds available. So we went to the ABAC board and I said, listen.
What is ABAC for our listeners?
ABAC goes back to the Phillips semiconductor plant when we had some incentives for that plant. When Phillips left, there were some clawbacks to that. Those dollars were put into ABAC, which is a business and education exchange where we take those dollars and we use them for educational purposes.
Okay.
Well, we went to ABAC and said, look, this is a situation where education should be in the forefront because we have to have this discussion. So we took $100,000, or we were granted $100,000 from ABAC to set up this working group and to put together a documentary and to really start in a concerted effort to have this discussion in our city. Excuse me. but also to have something that we could use statewide. So if we can produce some educational materials, we can get them to Roswell or Santa Fe or Tucumcari, wherever it happens to be in the state, or even outside of the state lines. So we just want to make sure that we're doing two things: having the discussion, educating people, and then, of course, the third thing will be developing that into treatment programs, whether they're statewide or within the city of Albuquerque, to make sure that people that find themselves in a situation where they're addicted to prescription drugs, that they have some place to go.
When you talk about this discussion being uncomfortable, explain what you mean.
Well, I think when you start talking about young people dying from prescription drug overdoses, you start talking about young people getting hooked on prescription drugs and then moving to heroin and dying. I think that makes people in the community, it's a sad story, number one. Number two, it's like, gosh, is there something that we're doing, you know, as a community?
Is it embarrassing?
Yeah,
it,
whatever it happens to be. I really have to take my hat off to some of the local principals at the APS schools. Jennifer, the principals at La Cueva, is it Rosh?
Todd Rush.
Yes, Rush. He was one of the very first that had a town hall where he invited his students to come in and have this discussion and to listen to parents like Jennifer, listen to young adults who are addicted, listen to some of the stories that go with this. El Dorado High School has also had one. There are other schools that are starting to have this discussion. And it's what I'm saying as a mayor, it's okay to have that discussion. It's okay to take something that is, I wouldn't call it embarrassing. I would just call it it's a sad situation, but we need to talk about it.
Dr. Landon, I want to ask you to explain where the increase appears in the population in New Mexico. Are we talking about folks who are prescribed these painkiller medications and are just using them incorrectly, or are we talking about people who are using them recreationally and achieving overdose because of that?
Elaine, we don't have those specific data for New Mexico, but nationally, what appears clear is that about, if you look at people that are prescribed opioids, 80% of them get lower doses and go to a single physician. They account for about 20% of the prescription drug overdose deaths. And then 10% of patients are prescribed high doses of opioids by single providers, and they account for about 40% of the deaths. The remaining 10% of patients are probably of the greatest concern. These are patients who seek care from multiple doctors. They're prescribed high doses, and they account for about 40% of the overdose deaths. This third group, there's some doctor shopping going on in there. There's diversion going on in there.
What does doctor shopping mean?
That would be that somebody goes to more than one doctor seeking opioids.
In order to get more than you might be prescribed doctor at a time.
Yeah, typically a doctor would be under the impression that the patient is just coming to him or her. And with our prescription drug monitoring program, a doctor is able to go in and get the prescription records on a patient coming to see them, say, for chronic pain, and determine how many doctors is that patient visiting and is the patient receiving opioids for more than one doctor. This program just became web-based at the end of last month and should provide physicians with a just greater access to these records so they can help us reduce doctor shopping.
Jennifer, I want to bring you into the conversation. The city of Albuquerque did a needs assessment report, and one of the things that they found is that more young people are using opioid prescription drugs, and non-medical prescription use has increased. Can you talk a little bit about your knowledge as far as where the increase is occurring and with whom?
Sure. Thanks, Elaine. I think, you know, it's several different factors. I don't think there's any one entity to blame or any one reason for why we're seeing an increase in young people that are using prescription opioids. I think availability is probably key. I think these pills are readily available, whether they're getting them from a relative's medicine cabinet and using them that way, or whether they're getting them through their own legitimate prescription for injuries or pain or surgeries or whatever they have going on. I think the pills are readily available to our youth in our schools. You know, I don't think that there's probably I don't know that I've ever heard of a young heroin addict that started out with just heroin. They almost always start out using pills first.
So are pills the new gateway in a sense?
Yes.
Oh, very much. I think that's what we're hearing. We're hearing that young folks, there's this perception that if a prescription pill, look, this is perfectly legal. If this was given to someone by a doctor, this is something that is used 99% of the time for good things. How can it be bad for me? And you hear stories, and you hear stories of young folks saying things like, there's one young woman who we heard at the La Cueva event that was there. She said, I took one oxycodone and I fell in love. Mm-hmm. And certainly this is not everybody that ever takes a prescription drug gets hooked. That's certainly not the case, but there is that percentage where I think, and that's what's happening. And maybe young people are at a party or even adults, and somebody says, hey, this is something that is perfectly legal. This is not an illicit drug, so don't worry. It'll make you feel good, and it's not illegal, so why not? Well, for some, for a percentage of people, that is enough, and that sends them down a very bad path.
What do you think has caused the increase in prescription drug overdose deaths in New Mexico, and what can officials do to respond? What would you like to see your elected officials doing? We'll take your calls and comments today. The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We'll take your emails, callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post comments online. We got one comment online from Tammy Lynn, and she writes that she believes that the overdose rate from prescription drugs is a result of pharmaceutical companies pushing them because they are cheaper than cures to other illnesses. So, Jennifer, do you have a perspective on what role the pharmaceutical industry plays in the rise of sales? I think the details from the report, Dr. Landon, were that oxycodone sales in New Mexico had gone up 233%, I think it was, in the last decade.
Mm-hmm. I think that, there is a lot of money to be made with these pills. So I think that, in a lot of cases, money is definitely a factor. And I think that we do tend to treat the pain. We go for the easy fix, which is the pain. And, unfortunately, we're in a society today where doctors are seeing a large number of patients, and they're turning those numbers around pretty quickly. So they don't have a whole lot of time to spend with patients. And so the easiest way is to, and people honestly don't want to leave the doctor's office without something. They don't want to leave the doctor's office without a prescription for something. And so a lot of times treating the pain instead of the cause of the pain is much easier. And pharmaceutical companies benefit, they profit a lot of, from that.
Dr. Landon, your perspective on that?
I think pharmaceutical companies are definitely part of the problem, but they're also part of the solution. And I think there have been indications that they are willing to work with us in the state to help solve this problem. But clearly, for prescription drug overdose, the source, the ultimate source of these prescription medications are the drug companies. And they are acknowledging responsibility to work with the state in solving this problem.
So how do you work with the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, they will hopefully join us on our Overdose Prevention Council, and that we're forming, a governor-appointed council created as a result of Senate Bill 215 passed this past legislative session. And they will hopefully come to the table and help us come up with some solutions. It's clear that as the sales of prescription opioids has increased, our drug overdose death rate has also increased.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about prescription drug overdose deaths in New Mexico and the 62% increase that there has been over the past decade or so. We're taking your calls at 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. If you get a busy signal, you can shoot us an email to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. Today we have Mayor Richard Berry from Albuquerque here in the studio. Jennifer White Weiss from the Heroin Awareness Committee, and Michael Landon. He is acting director of the Public Health Division of the State Department of Health. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with your calls.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
On the next Radio Lab,
Patient Zero.
Patient Zero.
Patient Zero.
Was probably a Bantu man.
Patient Zero was a man.
He kills a chimpanzee. And he cuts himself.
From the first HIV infection to the first high five.
Give him the high five, handshake.
I had that feeling before everybody else did.
That's the moment. That's the moment it begins.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks so much for joining us. We're taking your calls on the skyrocketing increase in prescription drug overdoses in New Mexico. Let's go to Dorothy in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling because I was concerned for how many pills are actually prescribed for pain. Right now, I have a prescription in my hand for my 17-year-old who's getting his wisdom teeth taken out. Now, it's for hydrocodone, which I'm not sure is like is you know quite as concerned as oxycodone, but it's for 20 pills for his wisdom teeth. And like the other my other kids, when they had their wisdom teeth taken out, they might have needed one or two, possibly three or four painkillers. Pills after the wisdom teeth, so 20 with a refill just seems like so excessive to have around. Now, I'm not necessarily concerned that my kids would take the extras, but it's just then what do you do with all those extra pills?
Mayor Berry, with your work in the city, working with the industry, what is your take on this, what this caller is saying is she's observed an increase in the number of pills that are prescribed?
Well, one of the things that we hear is if you're a student in you know, these pills are sold on the open market for $20, $30, $40, $50, $60 a piece. I can't speak to the situation with wisdom teeth. All I can say is that, you know, these prescription drugs have been developed to do good things for people, to help with pain. The pharmaceutical companies have done a lot of research, spent a lot of time and money developing things that help people. Like anything from Tylenol to oxycodone can be misused, can do harm to you. And I think Dorothy's bringing up a good question, and she's one of the people that's paying attention. So you've got a youth that may need some prescription painkillers to help them recover from oral surgery. That's the appropriate use. If there's 20 there, Dorothy, and you think that they only need two or three, I think it's great that you're paying attention, and I would recommend that you would make sure that you know where the rest of the 17 pills are if they only take three.
Well, and then that Jennifer, that raises the question of what is the responsibility of doctors who are prescribing drugs to prescribe appropriately, and how is that decision made, and do you think that there is some excessive prescribing going on?
You know, my own personal opinion, I do believe that there is excessive prescribing going on, and I do think that it is a doctor's responsibility to make sure that the patient understands what they're getting and the addictive qualities of those drugs. And so I think if you're a parent and your child is being prescribed prescription opiates, which hydrocodone, to answer your question, Dorothy, is addictive and it is an opiate, and you do have reason to be concerned. I think it's up to us as parents to become educated about these drugs and to really know what we're getting from our doctors, doctors or dentists, before we give it to our kids. And then it's also, you know, the doctor's responsibility to make sure that we do understand the addictive qualities of these drugs. And for children to be able to receive these drugs, it's we just have to be careful.
Dr. Landon, from the Department of Health, what is your take on this excessive or non-excessive prescribing?
Well, specifically with respect to Dorothy's situation, child's provided with, say, 20 hydrocodone pills for wisdom teeth extraction, and they use three. So you have 17 left over.
And a refill, right? She also mentioned a refill.
Okay, but you've got 17 in your medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Well, you could do what I think most people do, which is you keep them for the next time somebody gets hurt or needs, you know, needs pain medication. A better approach would be after the acute situation is resolved, after the pain from the wisdom teeth extraction is over, go ahead and dispose of those drugs. So what you can do is just take them out of the original containers, mix them with an undesirable substance such as coffee grounds, and then dispose of that baggie in the trash separately from the container. And there are also drug take back programs, and those are excellent, and when you can take advantage of those, please do. But we can't always do that, and there's no need to leave 17-hydrocodone when the acute situation is resolved in your medicine cabinet.
Yeah, I remember hearing a story about someone who had passed away from cancer. The family had kind of collected a lot of medication in order to be able to get low prices on morphine as this person was passing. And then after that person passed, all of those, you know, hundreds of dollars worth of drugs were destroyed. And Mayor Barry, you were indicating that the city also has a drug take-back program. Yeah. Is that something where the drugs can be used again, or is that just an official way of destroying drugs that are not going to be used?
Yeah, we actually preferred those programs rather than, you know, flushing these down the toilet or down into our water system.
Or putting them in the landfill.
Or putting them in the landfill or putting them in a situation, and I think Dr. Landon had a good point, you need to make sure they're with some undesirable material. You don't want to just throw a prescription pill bottle because that could end up in the wrong hands.
I think it was dish soap was what was used in this other story I'd heard, mixing
right.
it with dish soap.
Right, and that's a good way, but we also have drug take-back programs. We have a permanent disposal units on Indian School just east of San Pedro, and the public can dispose of prescription drugs anytime between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you went to FDA.gov, there's some things you can learn there as well. Or if you just have questions in the city of Albuquerque, just give us a call at 311, and we will get you in touch with the right people. But I think from Dorothy to Dr. Landon to Jennifer, they're hitting on some great points. If you had surgery a while back and you've got prescription painkillers in your medicine cabinet, why? You'll be able to get those readily if you need them and when you need them. Don't leave those sitting around, because that's where, you know, that's part of the problem.
But isn't the question of cost part of this discussion, of that if you're paying for a bottle of 20 right. pills, you're not going to throw your pills away because you've paid for 20 pills, you paid for the doctor visit to get them. And so as Dr. Landon and Jennifer mentioned, maybe you hang on to them for future incidences. But my question is, what is this issue about there being so perhaps more drugs prescribed than are needed? And does that relate back to an industry that is looking to sell more products?
I think Michael probably be a better person to answer specifically about, the pharmaceutical companies. But I do think we as a consumer, like you said, we don't want to throw things away. We might. What if we twist our ankle?
Say to your doctor, I just want four, and I'll see if that gets me through.
Sure you can. Mm-hmm. Just like you can take your child to the pediatric unit and say, look, I know my child's got a fever, but it's probably a virus. Don't give them an antibiotic.
Right.
There has to be a proactive approach by the consumer on this as well. And I think the more we can make people aware, and that's why I think education is so important on the front end of this equation.
Let's take a few more calls. Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Clifton. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks. Wayne, I think you're getting the issue that I wanted to bring up.
Hey, Clifton, are you on a speakerphone?
No, I don't believe I am.
I'm going to have to... I can't hear you very well. Can you speak up, please?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, go for it.
Thanks, Elena. You're kind of touching on the point that I wanted to bring up. I really do think that we've got this whole industry, and I appreciate that a lot of the products that are available to us have great functions. But I have noticed the huge proliferation in advertising of all kinds of different products, which adds to this legitimacy of prescribed medicines. And it's sort of metaphoric to me to the legitimacy of alcohol relative to marijuana and other illicit drugs. And I also then want to tie it into this whole issue of where our health care is going, and wonder, when we look at all the fraud that's going on, if at some level or another, these prescriptions are fueling big pharma and costing taxpayers money, and if there shouldn't be some means of legislating what is an appropriate number of pills to, and I imagine that's difficult because some people handle pain differently than others. But I know, and thank you all for the advice on where to take all of my extra drugs. I've got plenty of little vials full of something that I've never even taken.
Thanks for your call, Clifton. Let's go to Mark in Santa Fe.
Hi, how are you this morning?
You're on the air, Mark.
Thank you. How are you this morning? Thanks for covering this topic. I wanted to ask professionally what their opinion is about acetaminophen being woven into the opioids that are out on the market and how that's contributing to the liver failure and or death profile from the use of those drugs in an overdose situation. And I also wanted to hear some feedback about what the VA's role is in supplying large amounts of drugs out onto the market, the black market. Thank you.
Dr. Landon, your thoughts on acetaminophen?
Yes, acetaminophen in high doses can lead to liver failure, and that is a concern. However, the opioid component is of much greater concern and contributor to these overdose deaths. So where acetaminophen in large doses can cause liver failure and problems, we really feel that these drug overdose deaths are primarily due to the basically the acute effects during an overdose.
Jennifer Weiss with the Heroin Awareness Committee.
I'm not a doctor or able to speak to, what acetaminophen does or doesn't do to your body, but I do think that the opioids that are part of that part of that drug are extremely addictive, and that is what's causing the overdoses. I think that, liver failure is obviously a risk, and I think that that's something that we're all aware of and that we know just naturally because doctors have told us that over time, to be careful of taking too much Tylenol or too much ibuprofen, things like that. So we kind of know that, but we don't always know how addictive these opiates are. And I think that's the piece, like Dr. Landon was saying, is that, we have to understand that this is now, the other part of that drug is even more dangerous than what we've always been educated on.
What about the VA and prescriptions making it out into the black market, the other part of that caller's question?
I believe he said physicians. He was speaking about physician's assistants, but I'm not.
He may have. I caught the part about VA prescriptions ending up on the black market.
Yeah,
anything that you know about that?
The only thing that I could speak to that about is that the impact of overprescribing prescription drugs is impacting multiple populations of people. So elderly people, there is a lot of prescriptions that come, elderly people do, a lot of times they're in pain. And so they get a large amount of prescriptions. And we've heard that, happening in Florida and on the East Coast, the overprescribing happening there. And I believe that's happening here as well. And so, those pills and back to what we were talking about earlier about what to do with these extra pills that are in our house, I don't think a lot of people realize that there are people that are breaking into houses now specifically for prescription drugs. And so there are people that if your house is on the market, they're going to go into your house to view or to see your house, and they're going to go straight for your medicine cabinet and look for those pills. I think we just have to be aware. It may not be people in our household, but people coming into our house potentially, whether we invite them or not, that are looking for those pills.
Mayor Barry, is that something you've seen in Albuquerque?
Yes. And if you look at, let's tie this into property crimes for just a minute. We've been very successful the last 2 years really going after property crimes and dropping that number significantly. And 9 times out of 10, if not more, what we find with property criminals, they're people that are supporting a habit of one kind or the other. And so this situation is really impacts negatively the human side of the equation. We have young people dying. We have people suffering from abuse. But we also, it impacts the entire community. And that's what I think people need to understand is this is a community-wide discussion. It's a statewide discussion. It's a national discussion. And so that, all of these things come together, and that's why we have to work together on a solution.
Let's go to Bill in Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Elaine. What is happening here is in the private sector. I'm a veteran. My primary care is from the VA. My dentistry is from the VA. My prescription drugs comes from the pharmacy at the VA. Every doctor, every dentist, every specialist that I see at the VA knows what I'm taking because it's in a computer-based program. And it cannot be overprescribed or anything because there's too many factors that will stop overtaking of prescription drugs, whether if it's the primary who stops it from a specialist or the pharmacy who stops it from the primary. There's controls. It's on the database. You cannot be over given opiums and medication through the VA. So that gentleman who called or whoever called that, it goes to a black market, is totally stupid and wrong. Thank you.
We also got an email from Jeffrey who suggests that people who doctor shop or who abuse their prescriptions should be entered into some kind of a physician's database in order to alert providers, which I think he's suggesting might kind of control the abuse of drugs. But he also says that the pharmaceutical industry needs to be held more accountable and that opioid drugs shouldn't be isolated because they're rarely used alone. They're often used in conjunction with other drugs. Jennifer, is that what you found in your work?
Yeah, I think that it's very, especially for adolescents, it's very rare for them to stick to one drug. So they'll be bouncing back and forth between drugs that will bring them up, more stimulant type drugs, and drugs that will bring them back down, like heroin or opiates, which are more of a depressant. And so you do see the fact where kids kind of bounce back and forth, and especially college kids. It's a huge influx of college kids kind of dabbling in multiple types of drugs. You know, they want to maybe take Adderall during the day so that they're able to get through their studies, and then they want to take Valium at night so they're able to sleep. So you do see a lot of them mixing these types of drugs. And I think with the prescription drug monitoring database that is in place with the state, that has recently been updated, and I know the pharmacy board is working on putting some more factors in place that will make that database much more functional and usable for doctors. But that could, you know, if doctors use it and they actually pull up the patient's information, that could stop a lot of the overprescribing.
Dr. Landon, in your analysis of the data from New Mexico, which part of the population is more at risk? I understand that youth are more at risk, but can you talk to us a little bit more about some of the details?
Well, the group with the highest rate of drug overdose death are persons 45 to 54. So where, this all starts with youth. I mean, addiction starts with youth or can start with youth. The age group that has the most deaths or the greatest risk of death, 45 to 54. We also know that traditionally, the Hispanic population has had greater rates of overdose death. The white population is catching up. Luckily, American Indians have had lower rates of drug overdose death in the state, but again, their rates are increasing. The northern part of the state traditionally has had the highest rates of drug overdose death, but particularly with prescription drug overdose death, the southern part of the state is, we're seeing pockets of drug overdose death there. Men are more likely to die of a drug overdose death, but with prescription drug overdose death, we're seeing more women dying from those deaths. Not more women than men, but they're starting to catch up. So it's a very complex, evolving epidemic that it's great we're talking about it, and we've got a lot of good ideas, but we really have to work hard to implement these quickly so we can make a difference in this problem.
We got an email from Tony who writes that she's concerned that doctors will hear this show, lower patient dosages, and therefore cause people who are truly in pain to suffer more. I've definitely heard anecdotes about people who need pain medication and who are having a hard time getting it because there's this resistance in some clinics and things to prescribing pain medication. So, Mayor Barry, is there a response that you have to that?
You know, all of our experiences come from what we know and who we know and what we've seen. My sister's a pharmacist, and I've had this discussion with her. She lives out of state, but she's now a professor of pharmacy, and I've asked her about that. And I have a lot of confidence in the medical establishment, if you will, that a patient can always go into their physician and have a meaningful discussion about their situation, about what they're facing, whether it's pain or any other medical issue, and that they can come to resolution with their physician. I think it's a proactive consumer approach where you have to have those discussions. So I don't necessarily share that concern. I think it's like everything else. When you have a problem, 90% plus of the people are doing the right things, whether it's consumers, doctors, and you have a small percentage, I'm sure way less than 10%, but you have a small percentage that where it's getting abused. So I don't necessarily share Tony's concern, but I think though, if when a patient does go into a doctor, if awareness brings that discussion to a higher level, I think that's a positive thing.
Mayor Barry of Albuquerque. We also have Jennifer Weiss from the Heroin Awareness Committee. And Michael Landon is also joining us today. He is the acting director of the Public Health Division of the New Mexico Department of Health. We're talking about the skyrocketing increase in prescription drug overdoses in New Mexico over the last decade. We're taking your calls right now. Our lines are full. If you can try again in just a moment, hopefully you'll get through. You can also send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. If you do want to try the phone line, the number is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with your calls.
Donating to Goodwill means keeping it local, accepting donations of gently used clothing, furniture, and more at locations across the state to support programs helping New Mexicans overcome barriers to employment. Online at goodwillit.org, a message from the tax-exempt Goodwill Industries of New Mexico.
Then I won't have to worry about that broken down rag before.
Yes, indeed, it's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car, and here's how. Donate it to KUNM. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We're talking about the increase in prescription drug overdose rates and what can be done in response today. Let's hear from Glenn in Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you so much for this discussion. We haven't touched yet, or you all haven't touched yet, on returning vets. I heard the other day on NPR that we now have over 58,000 who have committed suicide. That's greater than the number that we lost in Vietnam. Could you touch on that? Could you also touch on doctors who are getting hooked? I know a doctor in Albuquerque who had to quit his practice and go into treatment. And then finally, somebody in my own family was introduced to ecstasy and had a near overdose. And I wonder, why is it so easy in Albuquerque to get ecstasy? Thank you.
Mayor Barry.
Well, Glenn, I think let's start with the veterans issue. You know, we've got men and women who've put their life on the line to defend our country and democracy around the world. And I think one of the most important things that we can do when they return home is to make sure that they have the services that they need, whether it's with post-traumatic stress, or whether it's with other issues that they have, whether it's pure physical issues, whatever happens to be, as well as employment and other things. So I think you hit on a good point there, and that is that we need to make sure that care is there for them when they return. When it comes to availability of drugs on the streets, I mean, there's a lot of people that have different opinions on that. Some would say that some of the felony laws in New Mexico are too lax, that it's an easier place to be a felon and be a drug dealer than it may be in some of the other states surrounding us. We don't have a three strikes law here. There's other people that simply say, no, it goes back to personal responsibility, and it goes back to those issues. And I think all of those have to be considered. And that's where, you know, prior to being mayor, I spent two terms in the state legislature, and you really see when you're in the legislature that there are people up there that are concerned about all these issues. And I think the best thing we can do right now is to make sure that we're coming together. You know, these aren't partisan issues. These are agnostic things. These are things that we can get together and all care about and craft solutions. And I think we're going to have to rely on the leadership in Santa Fe to do that. I think Governor Martinez is making a strong statement to help curb this. I think legislators, Democrats and Republicans both, are on board with this issue. So, you know, Jennifer and other families that have been impacted by this are making a big impact on policymakers.
Let's go to Tim in Velarde. Good morning, Tim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just have a comment to make. I live in Velarde, New Mexico, here in Rio Riba County, and we have the number one overdose rate in the country. There were three overdose deaths in Espanola and Rio Riba County. And I just was wondering, you know, we're just taking it like it's normal now. I'm wondering why we're not marching in the streets with outrage about what's going on. But I also want to make the comment about it's election time now, and I was wondering about the people that have thrown their hat in the ring to be elected. They need to verbalize and explain their viewpoints and reasons about this topic and issue and what they can do. I don't think we can leave it up to the pharmaceutical industry to regulate themselves, because that's just not going to happen. But it's up to the elected officials that have access and authority over these industries to state their viewpoints and reasons.
Tim, I wanted to ask you, what do you think would have an impact up in northern New Mexico with respect to overdose deaths?
Definitely education. As Jennifer and Mayor Barry have said over and over again, we need to educate the kids. We have a huge amount of treatment centers here in Rio Riba County as well, and we do need those, and they do their part. But if we start, you know, young and get these kids educated about the harms, you know, just because a doctor prescribes something doesn't mean it's okay. So we just need education, I believe, and we need more support. We are a poor county here. We don't have all the luxuries and money. You know, and I know budgets are tight everywhere, but we just need the education.
Jennifer, what does your organization do? And maybe you could talk a little bit about your personal experience.
Well, the Heroin Awareness Committee is a grassroots effort. And then to speak to Tim's comment, I think, you know, we can, it's very easy for us to sit back and look at places like Espanola and say, well, it's always been that way. You know, they've been that, you know, the drug problem up there has been this way for decades, and there's really nothing you can do about
it. This is normal.
Yeah, this is normal. It's you know, it's part of the culture. It's part of the heritage, things like that. And I just think that that's crazy to feel that way. And there, change can happen and change should happen. And that it really is up to the community within each area. It's up to community members and people within the community and people, you know, the legislators that live in that area, things like that, that can stand up and say, you know, we're not gonna take this anymore. We're done watching our kids die. We're done blaming other people for this problem. You know, this is our community. We're gonna take back our community, and we're gonna fix it. We're gonna do something. And you know, that's what the Heroin Awareness Committee does. I started the Heroin Awareness Committee in April of 2010 after I found out that my son was addicted to heroin. He was 16 at the time. He started using heroin when he was 16, but he got addicted through prescription drugs. So he was prescribed legitimate prescription opiates for injuries that he suffered in wrestling and football. You know, I didn't understand. I wish there was so much I wish I would have known then that I know now. And that's part of the reason why I do this, is just, you know, because it happens so fast and so quickly, you don't even know what hit you until it's too late. And then once you have a young person suffering an opiate addiction, it is a battle for their life. And there's nothing you can do but sit back and watch them slowly, you know, suffer and slowly fade away, because the addiction is so strong and so powerful. And we have to stop it. We have to prevent it. We have to stop it before it starts, because once they start on that path, it will affect them for the rest of their life. It will change their life. It will change their family's life. And ultimately it could kill them very, very easily. And we have to start with prevention.
Let's take another call. Fred in Albuquerque.
Hello. I'd like to thank you all for having the show. It's very important. And I think it's important to understand that some of the drugs that are prescribed to children for a variety of difficulties, including ADHD, really are the entry point. And, you know, there's a certain percentage who arrive at the end of their high school period, and they unfortunately lose the support from Medicaid. And this is a the story that's often happening. And the problem is if you have somebody on high doses of an amphetamine isomer, and that's essentially what Adderall and its other relatives are, you've got somebody that's going to be pretty desperate. And I think we, I'd just like to hear some commentary on that. And, you know, we use this term education in a lot of different ways. But right now, essentially, communities are being treated as commodities. And often, people in communities go from one public institution in public high school and straight to a public institution that we call prisons. So I'd like to hear some commentary on that.
This question of treatment. Dr. Landon, with the Department of Health, what are the initiatives that the state is doing to try to make sure that folks who need access to treatment are able to get it? I mean, it is an issue of cost in many cases. And I understand from the report, Mayor Berry, that the Albuquerque report indicated that the class, that poorer people often suffer more from these types of overdoses and addictions than folks who have more resources, and that must play a part in having access to treatment also. Dr. Landon?
Yes, we clearly need more access to treatment for opioid addiction in the state, you know, throughout the country. It's an issue throughout the country. Poor persons do have less access, it appears, but our Human Services Department with the state and numerous other state agencies are working hard together through the Behavioral Health Collaborative to improve the access to treatment for opioid addiction.
Mayor Berry, what is the city of Albuquerque doing with respect to access?
Well, part of our opioid working group is to craft solutions for better treatment. We're working with Tom Swistak, for example, at the county. We're working with the Opioid Working Group. We're working with the state of New Mexico to try to determine and actually do a thorough study. Instead of just you know, putting resources somewhere and hoping they work, we're trying to craft a solution and then work collaboratively with, you know, combining resources, because treatment is not inexpensive. And that's one of the things. It's like everything we talk about, whether it's gang prevention, crime prevention, drug prevention, it's so much less expensive and so much less painful to handle it on the front end than it is on the backside of the equation. But there always is a backside of the equation. So we're in the process of working through Robin Otten at Family and Community Services. We certainly have voucher programs where people can get treatment. But as Jennifer can attest, and some of the other families, a lot of times the treatment these families have to go for is two, three states away.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. John in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the treatment aspect, but also how we criminalize drugs rather than treat it as, a medical disease, the disease of addiction. And as a teacher in APS, I'm always talking to my teenagers that I teach about access to drugs, and they always tell me that they can get drugs easier than they can get alcohol because drugs are illegal and therefore not regulated, you know, by the government, and alcohol is. So much easier to get illegal narcotics for the youth.
Let's take it. Thanks for your call, John. Let's go to Elizabeth in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air, Elizabeth. And if you can give your comments quickly, since we're at the end of the show, that'd be great.
Right. I think the it's good to talk about needs assessment. It's good to talk about awareness groups. But if we don't have treatment, all the awareness and needs assessments aren't going to be doing us much good. We really need to make treatment on request a goal for the state. I mean, the state has spent money on drug treatment, but spends almost nothing on the effective medical treatments, such as methadone and Suboxone. And access to methadone is limited because there's only four clinics. I mean, there's only clinics for methadone in four cities in the state, Albuquerque, Boleyn, Espanol, and Santa Fe. And if you live somewhere else, you're out of luck or you have to travel long distance. Insurance doesn't pay for methadone. Medicaid is going to start paying for it. But most people aren't on Medicaid and most people aren't insured. And so those people will not have access. Those people that are doing methadone treatments pay $10 to $15 a day out of pocket, and for a lot of people that can be quite prohibitive and limit access. So instead, we really need to have more treatment on request, and more access to treatment.
Great. One more call this morning. Dave in Albuquerque. Good morning, Dave. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to tell you from the other perspective here, and that's I'm in the construction industry, and I use these drugs illegally. So I have a comment, and I'd like to ask Dr. Landon and Jennifer a specific question. First of all, Bill, who called earlier, said that the VA regulates drugs going out, but the takers don't necessarily take their drugs. Sometimes they just straight sell them, and that happens, and I know it for a fact. I deal with it. But my question to Dr. Landon and Jennifer is, why is it that I'm not addicted? If I need a pain pill, I've got one in my truck all the time. But I have a lot of friends in the construction industry. Some take pills on a regular basis. Some are addicted and some are not. Why is it that some people are addicted and some people like myself, I don't care, I don't need a pill right now, I won't take one. I won't take one until I actually have pain. And why is it that some people then go to OD?
Dr. Landon.
I never will.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for your call. Dr. Landon.
Dave, that's the million-dollar question. And I don't think we really know a good answer. We don't really have a good answer for that. We do know that there are certain propensities to addiction. We do know if the situation's right, if somebody's going through a difficult time. But they may be more susceptible to addiction. Overdose death is very complex. Someone does not need to be addicted to die of an overdose. However, many people that do die of an overdose are addicted. So, I mean, you know, we really need to work hard to answer your question.
Jennifer, your thoughts on that?
I think that some people just have a genetic predisposition for addiction, and so I think that's part of it. And then I also think that it just depends on each individual person and how fast their body metabolizes the drug. But it's a hard question to answer, and there isn't a black and white answer. It's very gray.
Well, I have posted a link to the Heroin Awareness Committee website at KUNM.org. Also, the Albuquerque City report on opioid, the needs assessment report that the city performed. That link is also on our website, along with the link to the Department of Health. Thanks to you all for joining us this morning. Mayor Bear, did you have a last thought as we finish the show?
We hear the same thing over and over again from families. If we knew then what we know now, life would have been better. And that's why education and the discussion is so important. And that's why we need to keep this discussion alive, not be afraid to talk about it, work together, and come up with meaningful solutions.
Albuquerque Mayor Richard Berry joins us on the show today. Michael Landon is Acting Director of the Public Health Division of the Department of Health. Jennifer Weiss is with the Heroin Awareness Committee. Thanks to you all for joining us this morning. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments on our website. Those comments are visible to anybody who uses our website, so if you'd like to join the conversation post-show, our website is a good way to do that. We do post the audio from the show right after we're done here today so that you can go back and listen to parts that you may have missed or other shows that we've done in recent weeks. That's all online at KUNM.org. Thanks so much to Roman Garcia for engineering this morning. Andy Lyman is our news intern, and he was screening your calls this morning, and Michael Hess assisted with production on the show today. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with a conversation on whether your vote counts. We'll look at the issue of voter fraud in New Mexico. Are people voting illegally here? Are there people who are being prevented from voting who have a right to do so? Is there voter fraud in New Mexico? That's next Thursday morning at 8 on the KUNM Call-In Show here on KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us.